Welcome to Bellwether Friends. Definitely not the first podcast featuring a discussion of pop culture and why we think you should like what we like. You should trust us because we're librarians. I'm Anna and my pronouns are she and her.
I'm Aline and my pronouns are she and her.
Every couple of weeks we'll get together and chat about a pop culture topic or two, what we think and how we feel. We'll end the show with our current obsessions. This is episode number 103, Romantic Comedies.
How seasonal of us.
It was, seasonal indeed.
You saw an article on the internet, did you not?
I did. I saw an article. I have not clicked into the article. What I want to do is the Rotten Tomatoes list of the 150 best romantic comedies of all time.
150, you say?
I do say.
This is going to be a long episode.
Well, we're going to go through the list.
Item by item.
Item by item. Our reactions are going to be live and unfiltered.
Right here. You heard it first.
And before we get started, I wanted to just talk about our personal definitions of romantic comedy as a genre.
And I have a couple of things I wanted to say, too.
Great. So, my personal definition is it has to have romance, i.e. it needs to have a happily ever after for the main couple, and it has to be at least somewhat funny. It can have tragic elements in it, but overall, it has to leave me not depressed.
I can agree with those elements, just like the requirement for a romance novel is that there be a happily ever after. A romantic comedy, we must end the movie with hopes for the central couple to live happily ever after, and evidence that that is a likely outcome.
Which is why My Best Friend's Wedding is not a romantic comedy.
Thank you. Don't at her. I think that it also needs to be funny, yes. And just to add a little bit of information, I know that as we're going through this list, I am going to have some reactions to some of these that are like, I loved it when I saw it as a teenager, and it is extremely problematic now. Or, boy, I really don't like this one because it doesn't seem to like its characters very much.
Right.
And so those are a couple of things that come up when we are seeing a romantic comedy that is billed as such.
Yes. We read the recent Two Bossy Dames article after we decided to do this topic. And
thank you, Margaret and Carrie. It was great and made me feel old.
They had plenty of black and white faves.
They did have black and white faves. That didn't make me feel any younger.
Right. So my other hope is to come across some that I haven't seen and that we might want to watch together.
Yeah, I anticipate we will probably have a few of those. I plan to agree with a bunch of them. We made a few notes before starting this endeavor, and we will make some notes during the endeavor, and we will probably close with the things that they didn't cover,
right,
that are our favorites, because even in 150, I think there's a chance they missed my top one.
You never know. And then maybe we'll include a list of our top X number in the show notes, because I think
this will help refine our tastes,
yes,
for sure.
Yes. So,
without further ado,
right, we will also link to this Rotten Tomatoes 150 Best Romantic Comedies of all time.
Okay.
Of all time.
Is it a countdown, I hope?
It is.
Oh,
we search high and low throughout movie history for every permutation of hilarious courtship and love captured on camera. It says. Each one had a minimum of 20 reviews on Rotten Tomatoes. Obviously, Rotten Tomatoes is just a subset, but this is a jumping off point for our discussion. So here is number 150. Chances are with Cybill Shepherd, Robert Downey Jr.
Nope.
Have not seen.
I saw it.
Okay. Chocolat 2000 with Juliette Binoche and problematic Johnny Depp.
It's directed by Lasse Hallström. I saw it. I don't remember thinking it was funny.
Okay, great. Under the Tuscan Sun with Diane Lane, Sandra Oh. I mean, we love Sandra Oh. I have not seen it, but I also haven't seen it because I never had any desire to see it.
Yeah, I did see it because Diane Lane is beautiful, and it didn't register for me. And I pay real close attention to romantic comedies. This is directed by a woman. Yay.
There are other European set romantic comedies, such as Only You and French Kiss, that I would watch again before watching Under the Tuscan Sun for the first time.
This is a good point.
So, on the list of problematic faves,
Yeah, number 147 is Pretty Woman, and you will hear a lot of shouting about how prostitution is not romantic, and I don't have any desire to shame sex workers or be in judgment on that point. I think there are some fun things in Pretty Woman. Almost all of us have seen it more than once.
I have seen it more than once. I think of it sometimes. I hear the songs that are in it, and it takes me back.
I think that the magnetism of 1988 to 90 Julia Roberts is indisputable.
Singing along to Prince in the bubble bath or whatever. Oh,
she's just adorable. So, and Hector Elizondo's stuffy hotel guy is just chef's kiss splendid.
And Richard Gere was just getting into his, like, slightly silvered.
Yeah, he was silver foxing it up a little bit. And I, you know, his, like, reserve and his, anyway, there were things about it that were love. All your faves are problematic. So, yeah.
So the next one, 146, is the 1995 remake of Sabrina with Harrison Ford. And I know this is problematic because he was, like, you know, 60 and Julia Ormond was, I don't know, 25 or whatever. But it also had Greg Kinnear. And I remember liking it.
So I loved the 1954 Sabrina, and so I saw the 1995 Sabrina in the theater because I love Harrison Ford, and Julia Ormond is extremely beautiful, and there's beautifully lit shots of her, and it's very loving. It wasn't very charismatic.
No, it's a little flat. I think maybe I should see the original Sabrina.
I don't think it's funny. You haven't seen it.
No.
Put that on the list. I think we should see it.
Because it wasn't at my library.
Because in 1954, coming home and, like, the chauffeur's daughter going off to finishing school and coming home, it's historical romance. Right. It makes a little more sense than it does in 1995.
So, 2007's music and lyrics with Hugh Grant and Drew Barrymore, I have not seen. I have seen many a romantic comedy with Hugh Grant.
I think that Drew Barrymore breathing fresh air into the life and career of a washed-up songwriter, as this description indicates, is a cute premise. I remember watching it and not hating it and not going back to it.
Yeah. Number 144, Sleeping with Other People, 2015. That just doesn't look like a romantic comedy.
No, the title doesn't seem like a romantic comedy either. We haven't seen it. It stars Jason Sudeikis and Alison Brie. Moving on.
Yeah. Frankie and Johnny, number 143 from 1991. Al Pacino and Michelle Pfeiffer.
Off-Broadway play, diner, waitress, and the cook. Super New York-y. I loved it because it was before I moved to New York. And I thought everything that had anything to do with New York was the pinnacle of romance.
Hey, our first one that features actors that are not white. Hooray!
Yay!
Brown Sugar, 2002, with Taye Diggs and Sana Lathan. I've heard of this one. I'm going to add Brown Sugar because it keeps coming up and I haven't seen it.
Okay, I'm into it.
Bride and Prejudice an adaptation of Jane Austen's classic in a Bollywood style. I enjoyed it also.
Right. It is directed by a Bollywood director. It has, like, a lot of Bollywood elements. It is in English. It is an adept. And it was a real good time, especially for me seeing it before I had seen much in the way of Bollywood.
Right. I want to rewatch that one. Number 140, we made it through 10. See, we're zooming right along.
We are going to be so busy watching all the rest of these. You are writing furiously.
13 going on 30, starring Denison alum Jennifer Garner.
And Mark Ruffalo. Mark Ruffalo. Also, Judy Greer is the best friend, and we always love Judy Greer.
So the dames mentioned a category that you don't own, but you will watch while you're folding laundry, because it's on television, and 13 going on 30 is definitely I watch you fold laundry while it's on television.
We might edit the podcast with it in the background because we know it well enough.
We may have done such a thing.
I feel like we have done. I really liked 13 Going on 30. I don't think I saw it in the theater, but I think I got it when the library got the DVD, like, pretty promptly, because I used to maintain a list and put holds on new releases at the library really consistently, and that seems like that was during that time frame.
And that's the story of a 13-year-old who wakes up in her adult body and figures out all of the terrible choices that her adult self has made, and then, you know, comedy ensues. So, I like 13 going on 30.
It's like a lady-centric big, but it's better because there are things about it that are the politics of early aughts big city femininity.
Indeed. So, here we get to one of Aline's faves, number 139, Love Actually. I am not sure that it is a romantic comedy purely.
It's not. And, you know, it's not one of my favorite romantic comedies. While it is a favorite movie that I will rewatch any time, there are happy stories and there are sad stories and there are lots of people connecting and there are lots and lots of white people in it.
And it's very, there are definitely parts that are not humorous nor romantic. So. Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, I don't even know if it holds up. It's definitely, I own it, but it is definitely folding laundry when it is on TV.
Yeah, action. So this one obviously needs to be higher on the list, number 138.
Super way higher on the list. 10 Things I Hate About You from 1999. We love this movie. It is a brilliantly written adaptation of The Taming of the Shrew, starring Julia Stiles and the late, great Heath Ledger, with adorable side bits with Larissa Olenek and
That one guy
with three names.
Yep.
You know, the good-looking young one who was on Third Rock from the Sun. I'm not going to remember his name. Anyway, it's funny and it's sharp and the central woman is not always likable.
I mean,
indeed,
there is the,
she is a little edge on her.
There's still a fabric shortage on some the outfits.
The crop tops of the 90s are rife.
Even though it was late 90s.
Yeah, and full disclosure, it was co-written by a friend of mine. So,
right.
That's why we think it should be
way higher.
And it should be way higher. But we also love it and own it.
We do. The 5-Year Engagement from 2012. I do not know this one. It is Jason Segel and Emily Blunt, Chris Pratt and Alison Brie. Irreverent comedy.
Huh. I feel like I don't need to see it.
Yeah.
And I don't remember seeing it. So there we go. Okay.
Number 136, Laggies from 2014. Overeducated and underemployed 28-year-old Megan Keira Knightley is in the throes of a quarter-life crisis.
Okay. Nope. I mean, we didn't see it. We don't know it.
Yeah, also looks pretty white again. Oh, Coming to America, 1988.
So, Coming to America was, it came out my senior year of high school, but I don't think I saw it in the theater, but I know I've seen it like a dozen times.
Yeah.
I was an Eddie Murphy fan in the 80s. This is a hilarious romantic comedy with mistaken identity. It is very, very much
of its
a princess in theory and also of its time.
I remember rewatching it a few years ago. And
right,
like,
we did.
Oh, that's a thing that's happening in this movie. I've forgotten about that.
Yeah, yeah. Was there a Two Bossy Dames live tweet of it?
No, there was a Bell with a Friends live tweet of it.
Did we really?
Yeah.
We're brilliant. But you should definitely read A Princess in Theory by Alyssa Cole instead.
Just go with that. So I am going to disagree strongly with Reality Bites 1993 as being a romantic comedy that should be on this list. But that might be my own visceral reaction to the unwashed Ethan Hawke.
So Reality Bites, it came out later than I thought it did. So I was finishing graduate school when it came out, so I definitely should have known better. But I know I liked it a lot. It has a good soundtrack. It definitely is the politics of young whiteness in 1993 or something.
It's very of its time.
Super of its time. And we say this a lot, but there are some things, and we'll try to call them out. I'm hoping they're going to be much higher on the list.
Right,
there are some timeless things that
timeless.
Super hold up.
Yes. So, number 133, William Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream. This is an adaptation I have not seen with Calista Flockhart, Kevin Klein, Rupert Everett, and Michelle Pfeiffer. Or maybe I have seen it and I blocked it out.
You have seen it. It's good. It's a good adaptation. And it's not a romantic comedy, really? really. There's not a lot of happily ever after. They're
the lovers that get Hermia and Lysander or whatever. I don't remember. Yeah, maybe not. Okay. Heartbreaker from 2010, which appears to be French. A French comedy. Two of France's biggest stars.
Okay, so it's... we haven't seen it.
Doc Hollywood, 1991, featuring Michael J. Fox. I was more interested in seeing the one where he's like a concierge at a hotel than Doc Hollywood.
Yeah, I remember seeing this and nothing is resolving for me.
Michael J. Fox as a romantic comedy lead always felt a little implausible to me.
Well, he's not your type.
He's not my type. Also, he's very short.
He's not your type. We're not going to height shame anyone.
It's not that. It's just like he's funny.
There are pocket-sized Lotharios everywhere.
Like, I feel
particularly
like
in Hollywood.
He should be given a chance. Yes. The Wedding Singer, 1998. I never watched this as many times as people I knew. Adam Sandler and Drew Barrymore. I feel like Adam Sandler is one of those where you like Adam Sandler or you don't like Adam Sandler.
And I, to my unending distress, tend to like an Adam Sandler
vehicle
romance.
Oh, okay.
There,
I like the romance part of Billy Madison.
I have watched more Adam Sandler movies than you would expect me to have watched, and I have been taken in by the romance in each and every one of them. And it is not shame, it's just sort of confusion when I see one of these, because I would, you know, I'm a good sport, I will see something with a companion, and then I would be like,
see, those weirdly. Movie producers that insert a romance into something else so that
they're onto something.
So that ladies will want to see it.
Yeah.
They're not wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Fever Pitch 2005, adapted from Nick Hornby's book.
So there's a UK version that is about the footy instead of the baseball.
Right. So this, you would think it'd be right up my alley. It's got Drew Barrymore, Jimmy Fallon. He's a Red Sox fan.
Yeah.
But I watched it once, and then I was like, and I'm done.
It's also directed by the Farrelly brothers, which might be a cue.
Maybe.
Yeah, so I saw it, and I think that Drew Barrymore and Jimmy Fallon are cute, and I didn't see it again.
It's missable. Tin Cup, 1996, with Kevin Costner as a golf pro, and Rene Russo.
I love the poster, because he's got his backwards ball cap and his tank top, so he, like, looks... and he's not facing the camera, so if you squint a little bit, he could be butch lesbian wooing Rene Russo. And this was when Rene Russo was at her, like, peak of, you know, refined lady allure, where she was in the Thomas Crown Affair and stuff. Tin Cup was cute. I saw it.
I haven't seen it, even though it's got a sports angle.
Right? I would think you would see the sports angles.
I don't think I like Kevin Costner.
Okay.
Friends with Kids, 2012. It's got Adam Scott in it.
So I saw this. It's got Jennifer Westfeldt and John Hamm, the previously a couple, and Kristen Wiig. It's clever and sharp, and it's also not very... it's not very kind to its characters.
Okay.
And so it doesn't work for me. It's a little scathing, and I think that it's mostly at a dinner party with these three couples, and it just... no.
Number 126, Zach and Miri Make a Porno, 2008, Seth Rogen and Elizabeth Banks.
Cuter than you would have expected it to be.
Kevin Smith. That makes sense.
All your faves are problematic. He can occasionally do something romantic in his movies.
You've Got Mail, a remake of a remake. Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan. I prefer an earlier version of this. I still don't love the part where you have people who have been corresponding, and one of them finds out who the other one is and doesn't let on that they know and continues trolling them. Like, that makes me not like You've Got Mail as much as other Tom Hanks, Meg Ryan movies.
This was directed by Nora Ephron. It is set on the Upper West Side. It was filmed when I was living there. I remember walking down the street and being like, why have they wired orange leaves into the spring trees? Okay.
There's some judgment about big box bookstores.
There's definitely some judgment about big box bookstores. So it was like a love letter to my neighborhood. You know, the place where she has the rose in the book was the place that had the best chocolate cheesecake and was just a block away from my apartment. And I can hardly watch it without losing my mind.
I have it on VHS.
Shh. And it's cute and it's romantic. Parker Posey.
Yeah, she's really good in it.
Is really, really good in it.
And Greg Kinnear's good in it, too.
And Greg Kinnear's good in it. Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks have good chemistry. They are lovable, and this is, you know, usually higher on a list of romantic comedies, honestly. Oh, yeah. I cannot wait to see what they push higher.
Keeping the Faith 2000, Edward Norton debuts as a director in this comedy drama. No, no.
He is a priest.
Right, I remember this one.
And it also stars Dharma.
Right.
It was Jenna Elfman. Weird. It was weird. And, no. I mean, no. It
okay, wasn't. So Benny and June, 1993, I watched many a time. Johnny Depp and Mary Stuart Masterson. The soundtrack is the best. That's where I learned about the Proclaimers.
It's great. It's great. Benny and June's soundtrack is great, great, great. This came out when I was in grad school. I remember seeing it in a movie theater.
I think that they would cast it differently these days, should they remake it.
Mm-hmm. It also had Aidan Quinn in it, who I will get to later.
Oh, great. About Time, 2013, with Domhnall Gleeson and Rachel McAdams.
It's time travel. He messes up their first meeting and their first date, and he can time travel, and so he keeps, like, so it's got that creepy stalker thing where he is, like, gonna make it work with her no matter what, and he's using his time travel things, but it stars the Weasley and Rachel McAdams. It's, yeah, I'll watch it with you.
Bill Nye in it.
Yeah, I'll watch it with you.
Hitch, 2005, with Will Smith and Eva Mendes.
I have folded some laundry to this movie.
I have never watched it.
He's like a slick guy who like helps men get their game.
Right, he's like a matchmaker kind of
guy. He's not a matchmaker.
But like
dudes hire him to get in there, to help them get in there. It's funny, and Eva Mendes is luminous.
Luminous. In and Out, 1997, Kevin Kline and Joan Cusack. I feel like this one was monumental in showing happy gay people.
20 years ago, yeah. It was revolutionary.
Directed by Frank Oz, interestingly.
Very interesting.
I think I've seen it once. I don't have any. If I can remember lines from it, that means it was in the personal canon, which we'll have in a future episode.
Right.
Baby Boom, 1987, with Diane Keaton.
I just read something about this recently, and I can't remember what the title of the BuzzFeed list was, but Diane Keaton inherits a friend's baby, deceased relatives.
14-month-old baby.
And she is a career woman in the city, and she is not interested in giving up her life, and she is not interested in taking on motherhood, and it's an amazing Diane Keaton performance.
I've never heard of it.
You've never heard of it?
Never even heard
of it. Well, 1987, it was like before your time. And I think that I'm going to see if I can find the thing so that you can read the blurb and see if you want to see it.
Celeste and Jesse Forever, 2012. Rashida Jones, Andy Samberg. I mean, I like Rashida Jones.
I do too. I remember reading about this and not being that interested in it. And
oh, I see. They met in high school, married young, and are growing apart.
I'm sorry. The sundering of a marriage is not romantic.
Right. Or funny, usually.
And the struggle of coming back around to each other is painful to watch.
Yeah. So, Populaire, 2013, is number 117.
Another French one. Also starring Romain Duris.
I feel like we should try a French romantic comedy sometime.
Well, I like Bérénice Bejo, so I'm here for this one.
Okay, I'll put that on the list.
Definitely Maybe, number 116, from 2008. Ryan Reynolds, Rachel Weisz, Isla Fisher, and Derek Luke. I remember seeing adverts for this and being like, I want it to be a romantic comedy, but I didn't see it, so.
Well, it's got our boyfriend and Rachel Weisz in it.
Okay. Write it down. I like Isla Fisher, too. I think she's got some Daffy.
Better Off Dead, 1985, is number 115.
One that
$2!
Anna recites regularly. And I, in spite of my obsession with John Cusack in the 80s and 90s, I think I only saw this like once.
But we own it on VHS.
Great. Don't worry. It did not get into my brain.
It is flawed in a variety of ways.
Right.
It has weird animated sequences.
Which are not bad, but they were pretty
weird.
They're very weird.
It's got a foreign exchange student. It's got...
Who is the cutest little button.
But it's got some great lines and... Oh, also, he is trying to kill himself because his girlfriend has broken up with him. But
and he would be better off dead.
Right. So, again, it's flawed, but charming. The next one should not be on this list.
As we already mentioned, My Best Friend's Wedding from 1997. Moving right along.
Something's Gotta Give, 2003, a romantic comedy featuring old people.
Which I saw and I thought was a little bit charming, but here's the synopsis. Harry Sanborn, Jack Nicholson, is a perennial bachelor who only dates women under the age of 30. Now, he ends up with Diane Keaton because she's the other person, but that whole premise is no good. Watch it for the Nancy Myers-ness of the beautiful
the
houses
design.
And the layered linens on Diane Keaton.
The costuming. Twelfth Night, we own this on VHS also. So Twelfth Night is the cross-dressing twins.
Right. Shakespeare.
Shakespeare, Helena Bonham Carter, Richard Grant, Nigel Hawthorne, Ben Kingsley.
Imogen Stubbs is also, she's the blonde one.
Right. Yeah. So that's a good Shakespeare adaptation, which we still need to watch together.
Yes. The next one, 111, is Sleepless in Seattle, which is Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan being charming. Watching it with me involves a whole lot of, she parked in this neighborhood and ran across the street to another neighborhood, which is a challenge.
Yes.
But, like Margaret and Carrie said in theirs, this is a lovely romantic comedy that also has a lot of stalking, and the leads only have a few minutes of screen time together.
That is the main problem, but it has such good supporting cast, like Rosie O'Donnell and Bill Pullman and
Gabby Hoffman and the kid.
Tom Hanks' wife.
Tom Hanks' wife?
Rita.
Oh, is she in it?
Yep.
Oh, that's nice. I'm like, his wife is dead in the movie, but you're talking about Rita Wilson because she is one of the people.
This is one that I quote frequently.
Yes.
I can't not. It should probably be higher than 111, but it does have some structural issues. What If 2014 is number 110? The story of a medical school dropout who's been repeatedly burned by bad relationships. Daniel Radcliffe.
It's also got Adam Driver in it.
Oh, Adam Driver and Daniel Radcliffe?
Yeah, that ought to be an interest. I wonder if
they
have any
scenes
together.
That would be great. I'm curious. Mighty Aphrodite.
Directed by Woody Allen. Enough said.
Okay. My Big Fat Greek Wedding. I loved My Big Fat Greek Wedding from 2002, and we watched the sequel as well.
And we watched My Big Fat Greek Wedding just before seeing the sequel in the theater,
it held up
for us.
Yeah.
Nia Vardalos is so charming. And Chris in the Morning, you know, we like his dad vibe a lot.
Yeah.
Even when
he's just got a laid back vibe.
Not dadding it up.
So, I have not seen number 107.
I didn't realize that you had not seen Muriel's Wedding. You need to add this to the list because the friendship between Toni Collette and Rachel Griffiths is worth it. There is ABBA lip syncing in costume, and that's why I say, oh, Muriel, so often.
Yeah.
Don't think your name is Muriel.
You say I'm terrible or some, whatever.
Muriel, you're terrible. It is Australian. It is white. It is 24 years old, and I liked it.
Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist is based on a book.
Rachel Cohn and David Levithan.
Starring Michael Cera and Kat Dennings. I haven't read the book, and there's something about Michael Cera that I don't find appealing, so I don't usually watch him.
Okay.
It could be because he's a man. I know. It's very...
He's not your type.
It's hard to
You
please
don't
me.
Like... Little pale pocket-sized dudes.
Okay, this is what we're learning from this list.
Right. I have read and seen Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist, and they winkled their way into my heart, and I don't think I need to revisit them.
No, I don't think so either. Oh, good. Wedding Crashers. I would not call this a romantic comedy, because it's mostly about annoying guys crashing weddings.
I have no argument with that assessment.
Number 104, Pretty in Pink, has a great soundtrack.
It has an excellent soundtrack.
It has a discussion of class issues.
It has class issues. It is the John Hughes movie that is not a John Hughes movie.
Right,
and it is not. And she ends up with the rich dude instead of her quirky best friend.
Which I like because he annoys me. And his character annoys me.
You don't like Ducky?
No.
Which is fine. We all have different responses to things. There are elements of the Molly Ringwald character where, you know, she is poor and she wants to be in with these rich kids. And everyone, it's...
I haven't seen it for quite a while. But when I was watching and rewatching Say Anything... and 16 Candles, I was not watching Pretty in Pink repeatedly.
Yeah.
I had a friend who did not like pink with Molly Ringwald's hair. And, like, we would spend the whole movie with her being like, she shouldn't be wearing pink!
I will agree with that assessment. And, I mean, I think you can wear whatever you want, but I agree that pink does not go with red hair.
You're gonna take this one.
Number 103 is Singles, 1992. It is set in the grunge scene of Seattle and was filmed at clubs I hung out at and stuff. Nobody looked like Bridget Fonda and Campbell Scott. Let me just tell you that right up front. Cameron Crowe is like a rock journalist and movie director. You probably know him.
He's married. So we need to watch this together so that you can be like, and that's the place where this happened, but it's not this thing that other also happened.
It has cameos by bands that you may have heard of. It has an excellent soundtrack. It has an amazing slice of the scene soundtrack that you should check out from your library if you don't have it already. We own it on VHS.
Probably somewhere. Man Up, we just watched. It is Lake Bell and...
Simon Pegg.
It's Simon Pegg. Simon Pegg's not mentioned here in the starring section, but it is Simon Pegg, and we like Simon Pegg. So, it was fine.
It was good. Yeah. It had the frustrated woman who would like to be taken in by romance, but has been burned too many times, and Lake Bell did this very well. She was just good.
There's something about how she's meeting someone for a blind date, and there's a book, and he's holding the book for some reason, and so they go on a date, even though she's supposed to be with someone else.
Yep, and there's some mistaken identity. And there's some relatable awkwardness between them, which I appreciate soft focus and everything working out perfectly, but I also like a little bit of reality in my improbable romance. And so getting caught in your shirt when you're trying to get it off so that you can make out with somebody is funny to me.
So While You Were Sleeping is one of those that I watched many a time. I love Black Underwears.
So I don't have all of it committed to memory. No. But I loved While You Were Sleeping. I've seen it more than once. I think that Sandra Bullock and Bill Pullman and...
Peter Gallagher's eyebrows.
The mistaken identity and not... It is not a mistaken identity confusion that goes too long or makes me too mad. Like, I don't feel like Sandra Bullock's character is trying to get over on these nice people.
Right, and also she's not actually engaged to the guy in the comas. They just think she is, and she's just, like, distracted by the... warmth of their family.
Because she's sad and lonesome.
Right.
So there are things about it that don't fall into that problem with You've Got Mail, where Tom Hanks knows that Meg Ryan is the person he's wooing, right. And he's not telling her that he knows.
Hey, we made it through the first 50.
We are a third of the way through! Are you still with us, guys? Clueless! Feel free to pause us and come back later.
Clueless should be way higher on this list, 1995, but it's more about... her, I mean, it's a romantic comedy, but the moments that she spends with Josh are not very many. So right. I can understand why it's not very high on this list.
Right. It is a great movie that we love a whole lot, and it's only
tangentially a romantic comedy.
Right.
It's funny, and there happens to be a romance in it, which I'm all for.
Right.
Number 99, Ruby Sparks, 2012. I know nothing about this movie.
No, this is the second one with Zoe Kazan in it, and I don't know if she's a romantic comedy star for me.
Mm. Okay.
She was in The Sick, The Big Sick.
Oh, right.
Number 98, Valley Girl, 1983, Nicolas Cage.
Directed by Martha Coolidge, this is widely recognized as like the first of the 80s teen comedies where it was getting...
I haven't seen it.
It is about Valley Girls.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, as the title might indicate. And Deborah, you never really saw...
watched it?
Possibly. You never saw Deborah Foreman again. I mean, she was in stuff. But Elizabeth Daly, who was Dottie in Pee-wee's Big Adventure and was also a Riot Girl before there were Riot Girls, she's in it.
Crazy Stupid Love, 2011, number 97. Steve Carell, Ryan Gosling.
Oh, this is the one where Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling do the Dirty Dancing jump.
Oh, yeah.
He is a player, and this one says something about unabashed sweetness and its terrifically talented cast. And I remember Crazy Stupid Love not liking its characters very much.
Yeah, okay. I love Cold Comfort Farm.
This is another one that Anna quotes
1995.
All the time.
They've always been stargatters at Cold Comfort Farm. Bring me my Liberty bodice!
Yes.
And the elastic sided boots. There's something nasty in the woodshed.
There's something nasty in the woodshed. Yeah. So
I saw something nasty in the woodshed. Okay. Technically.
Kate Beckinsale, Rufus Sewell. It's beautiful. It's lovely. It's also a beloved book.
Yep.
Give it a go if you haven't tried it.
The romance is subsidiary. What's the word I want?
Subjugated by the central woman's story?
It's mostly a story about her going to live in the country and not a story about her romance. Because she and her main romantic partner aren't together most of the time.
Yeah.
So.
Number 95 is Me and You and Everyone We Know, adapted from Miranda July's short stories and directed by Miranda July. We have it on the shelf over there, and we have owned it for a very long time, and I have never watched it.
Okay, I'll add it to the list.
The next is Bridget Jones's Baby, the sequel to Bridget Jones's Diary. We saw it. We had feelings about it. You can hear it discussed on a past episode.
No, I'm going to say no. Unless they all end up together, no.
Which they didn't.
It's not a romantic.
I remember.
I forgot about the truth about cats and dogs.
I forgot about the truth about cats and dogs,
I watched this many a time. So, Janine Garofalo, recently made problematic by herself. Uma Thurman. And, you know, a guy that they're both interested in.
Ben Chaplin is, I mean, he's like a less bristly Peter Gallagher. He's got eyebrows.
But it's like a Cyrano story with pets. Mm-hmm. And Uma Thurman is just really tall.
Uma Thurman is really, really tall, and Janine Garofalo is short and dark. And I remember loving it, and I am afraid to go back to it.
Yeah, I'm afraid to rewatch. I really loved it as well.
I'm not, yeah.
Let's not put it on the list. How to Marry a Millionaire, 1953. This is the oldest one we've had so far, I think.
Which is good, because it means that we might get some other old ones. I did not like How to Marry a Millionaire very much. I watched it. Marilyn Monroe, Betty Grable, and Lauren Bacall are models who all move in together, and they are going to find themselves rich husbands. And their household sounds like a whole lot of fun if you would just leave out the dudes.
So I'm going to speak on number 91, Kissing Jessica Stein from 2002. Have you seen this movie?
I have.
Do I remember correctly? So the story is that this woman is looking for the perfect man and instead finds a woman. But as I recall, they do not end up together.
I don't have any recollection of it, but the fact that it does not live in my lesbian movie category in my brain means that they must not.
I don't think they end up together. And so this one fails the happily ever after of the main characters.
But thumbs up for girls kissing.
Yeah.
John,
2013.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt, that's his name!
And Scarlett, okay. No. Number 90 was John, but it has been summarily dismissed. Okay, Bridget Jones's Diary, yes. Number 89. Watched it many times. Enjoy both Hugh Grant and Colin Firth.
Read the book,
yes.
Liked the movie a lot. Was into
mini breaks
and Colin Firth in an ugly Christmas sweater
jumper
I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
Watch it again. Oh, right. Going into his coat. Not sure about running down the street in your underwear in the snow, but right. Getting wrapped in his coat. Very good.
I watched Emma, the update version with Gwyneth Paltrow, many a time as well. If you were to say, Anna, pick one Gwyneth Paltrow movie that you want to watch, it would probably be Emma.
Okay, I liked it. I have read most of my Jane Austen by film, and I appreciated Emma and liked it a lot. Number 87 is probably my all-time favorite romantic comedy, and I'm appalled that it is so far down on this list. It is The Sure Thing from 1985, directed by Rob Reiner, starring John Cusack and a pre-Melrose Place Daphne Zuniga. It is two college students trying to get from their unnamed New England college to California over Christmas break without any money. So they both end up in the same rideshare after having been awkwardly attempting to tutor each other. She's very, very smart, and she has a Filofax that she keeps her whole life in, and he is a tossing about the football and
what's that thing you always
eating
say?
Pizza. And he has a funny roommate, and they read letters to Penthouse, and so they refer to breasts as generous scoops of mouth-watering flesh, which is a phrase that is in my lexicon. I can recite this movie. I have watched it with Anna, and I have refrained from reciting every line, but there are a few that I have to, like, wiggle her arm and make sure that she hears them. If you have not seen this movie, you really should. It does have some 80s sexual politics going on. John Cusack is trying to get to California because his best friend from high school has him lined up for a sure thing,
right,
which is a hookup with a girl with no strings attached, no guilt involved, a sure thing. Not that that's a quote from the movie.
No, I could tell it wasn't.
So we have it. We'll watch it again. Maybe we'll watch it this afternoon.
Okay. We'll put it on the list. So I have seen number 86, Notting Hill. This not only has Hugh Grant, it has Julia Roberts. It's a perfect combination.
And Reese Ifans.
I haven't seen it for a while, but I would totally rewatch it and then go to Notting Hill.
I was like, I've been to the shop. I have a picture of myself in front of it. It's cute, and it's like an ode to London, too.
Right. Julia Roberts is a movie star, and Hugh Grant owns a bookstore.
An Ideal Husband is an adaptation of an Oscar Wilde play, I believe. Yes. And it stars Rupert Everett, Julianne Moore, Jeremy Northam, and Cate Blanchett. It's a period piece. It is an adaptation of some pretty awesome source material. I am not really sure that Rupert Everett would make an ideal husband, because he's gay.
He's very handsome.
Not for a lady,
though,
right? But he's very handsome, and the women are beautiful, and the costuming is great. Minnie Driver is also in it.
I have not liked There's Something About Mary any of the times I've encountered it.
No, it's terrible.
So moving on. Working Girl, number 83, from 1988. I don't believe I've seen Working Girl.
Didn't we talk about this in a recent episode?
Yes,
you did. I was talking about it being like, it's got another New York romance of the things in the shoulder pads.
It has Harrison Ford in it. I'm going to put it on our list to review.
Okay. So it is a romantic comedy. It is funny. Melanie Griffith gets the guy. And it's directed by Mike Nichols. So he is like a dude.
I think we can move right past number 82, Jerry Maguire.
Yep. Sorry, Cameron Crowe.
Your Sister's Sister, number 81. Is this about lesbians? Probably not.
It doesn't look like it. It stars Mike Birbiglia and Emily Blunt. I like them just fine. But
it subverts rom-com conventions with sensitive direction, an unconventional screenplay, and a big heart.
A year after his brother's Tom's death, Jack is still struggling emotionally.
No. Okay, moving on. Number 80, 16 Candles. Again, problematic in various areas.
Super problematic in a whole lot of areas. It's a John Hughes movie. It's one where the leads do not have very much screen time together. They are cute. Molly Ringwald is adorable. There is a whole lot of casual racism and overt sexism. And I've seen it a bunch of times.
Yeah, I've seen it a whole bunch of times. I don't think I put it on my list here. Harold and Maude.
So Maude kills herself. Kills herself on her 80th birthday because she thinks she has lived a full life. So, this is not a romantic comedy.
Moving on. Forgetting Sarah Marshall, which has Kristen Bell in it.
It also has Jason Segel's penis more than once.
Really?
Yes.
And Russell Brand.
I
have not seen it.
With my dear friend, Navigadio.
Oh,
and
dear.
He
oh, dear.
Was horrified.
I'm sorry.
It's funny. It's a romantic comedy of 2008. It is not entirely successful in being a romantic comedy.
Oh, okay. We can move right on past As Good As It Gets featuring Jack Nicholson.
Best part of As Good As It Gets is Jack Nicholson's character is a compulsive obsessive, according to the synopsis here. There is a quick flash panning through his kitchen, and he has jars of M&Ms sorted by color.
Okay.
Which I find very relatable. So, but that's
just
it.
Just look at a screenshot of that and yep. You're all set.
Maybe I'll add one to the show notes.
Number 76. Arthur, would you like to sing?
I am not going to sing. I will tell you that the only time that you might want to see this 1981 confection is if you are caught between the moon and New York City.
There you go. Italian for Beginners, 2001. I feel like I...
It says it's part of the Dogma 95 movement. No, 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 no. There is no romance and no comedy in the Dogma movement.
Okay, back in time to the 7-Year Itch featuring Marilyn Monroe and her dress blowing up.
So Billy Wilder directed, and Billy Wilder is amazing. The 7-Year Itch is very much of its era. Tom Ewell's family is off to summer vacation, and he is alone in the city weaving fantastical fantasies about the girl in the apartment down the hall or something. And so it's super problematic and funny.
Okay. So maybe more comedy than romance. The Importance of Being Earnest.
Another adaptation of an Oscar Wilde play.
Yep.
But this one was done in 1952.
This has Michael Redgrave as Jack Worthing.
So this, The Importance of Being Earnest, it is to me an entire play based on the one scene in My Fair Lady where Audrey Hepburn is having tea with Henry Higgins' mom, expanded into a play.
No, 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 no to number 72.
The 40-Year-Old Virgin. Even though we love Catherine Keener, we will move right along.
Love in the Afternoon, 1957.
Also no, because a 20-year-old Audrey Hepburn is hooking up with an 80-year-old Gary Cooper. But Billy Wilder...
Number 70, Roxanne. Now, I got this one from the library on multiple occasions. This is a real Cyrano with the long nose action. Steve Martin being very charming. He had a little romantic comedy streak there.
Daryl Hannah. I saw it.
I saw it, too. I just wouldn't put it over 10 Things I Hate About You.
No.
For example.
If you're going to talk about...
just to pull out
talk about adapting classic texts.
Right, exactly.
Right.
500 Days of Summer, I don't think that ends well.
I don't think it ends well either, because the 500 Days of Summer, Zooey Deschanel's character is named Summer, and Joseph Gordon-Levitt is with her for 500 days, and the story is told in flashback over their relationship. Well, it says it's a wry nonlinear romantic comedy, so maybe okay. I'm missing a detail,
but
it doesn't count.
Right. So Much Ado About Nothing... The Joss Whedon adaptation, number 68, I'm going to say just please watch the better...
Emma Thompson, Kenneth Branagh version.
Yep.
I did not hate the Joss Whedon version. I still think that Kenneth and Emma are just luminous.
Right. Crossing Delancey, 1988.
I missed this one! When I was writing them down, Crossing Delancey is a very high one on my list. Amy Irving, former wife of Steven Spielberg, is a bookseller in New York, and Peter Riegert is a pickle salesman on the Lower East Side, and it is...
Wait, is it New York
It romance? Is New York. Hey, it's a New York romance! It is probably also part of why I lived in New York, why I moved to New York, because I saw it in 1988 when I was a senior in high school. I probably watched it from
you
the library
like,
in college.
I need to go find me a pickle salesman.
The characters are Jewish. They are recognizably, culturally, and ethnically Jewish, and this is not super common in this genre.
Yeah.
And it is so good and so romantic. She, thinks she's in love with this jerk writer because he, like, charms her, but he's... Anyway, you wrote it on the list. We need to get it from the library and watch it.
Okay. This next one, I was afraid would be on this list. This film by Kevin Smith came out in 1987. It is called Chasing Amy. It is not romantic, and it is not that funny. And those of us who are lesbians do not like this movie.
Because Amy is a lesbian who is converted by the love of Ben Affleck.
Briefly. So they don't even end up together.
Right.
And it's definitely about Ben and his feelings and not about Amy. And it's not that we don't think that women can...
Have fluid sexuality.
It's that it's Ben Affleck and it's not about Amy. It's about Ben.
So, well, Ben is chasing Amy.
Right. So that... But it's not a romantic comedy by any measure. Sorry, Kevin Smith. Not sorry. Here's the better Much Ado About Nothing, which is rightfully placed above the other Much Ado About Nothing at number 65, Kenneth Branagh. It's a classic.
Both of them are very true to Shakespeare's text.
Yes.
The dialogue is what Shakespeare wrote. Even the contemporary Joss Whedon version uses the language. And they are great. I am a huge fan of watching Shakespeare adaptations on film because they are accessible to people and the works are meant to be seen rather than read.
Maggie's Plan?
Greta Gerwig.
2016, we don't know anything about this one.
Ethan Hawke.
A young woman longing to start a family? Complicated love triangle.
So every time these critics consent sigh, say that this film gives romantic comedy sensibilities a smart subversive twist.
That's what I want.
That's a red flag for me.
I'm not into... I want it to be good, but not twisty.
How about romantic and comedic and stop twisting?
Oh, Splash.
Splash.
So Splash was on the early end of Tom Hanks's romantic comedy run.
Yeah.
Daryl Hannah as a mermaid. I watched it. I remember seeing it. I don't remember anything about it.
Directed by Ron Howard, one of his early outings. Hey, it stars Eugene Levy, too. So,
oh, my goodness.
The cool thing is that it opens with a flashback. And so Tom Hanks falls overboard and is rescued by a mermaid. And then she turns up 20 years later in his life. And so I like that kind that fairy tale element. Mm-hmm. And it's cute and weird, and it's definitely of its time, and I am not going
to
revisit it.
Yeah, I don't think we need to revisit. Purple Rose of Cairo, 1985, directed by Woody Allen.
Next. Moving on.
Breakfast at Tiffany's. Again, this is not a romance.
It is not.
Moving on. Pat and Mike. Spencer Tracy, Katharine Hepburn.
Sports.
I'm not sure. Maybe I've seen this once, but I should see it again. Pat and Mike.
Katharine Hepburn is a college PE teacher who enters a golf and tennis contest.
And he's a reporter, right?
And I think he's a reporter. And anyway, it's...
A sports comedy, George Cukor.
Yeah.
Yes, we need to revisit that one. The American President is number 59. Michael Douglas and Ed Benning.
So this is directed by Rob Reiner as well. It is... Michael Douglas is a single president who begins to woo Annette Bening. It was an early outing in a grown-up romance where they weren't 20 and they weren't, like, in college or immediately out of college. They were grown-ups. They had dates. It's not terrible.
Number 58, The Heartbreak Kid from 1972. Charles Grodin, Jeannie Berlin, Sybil Shepherd.
It looks like it has a sports thing. Oh, wait. While on his honeymoon, a new husband finds himself attracted to a wealthy, gorgeous woman he meets along the way. No.
Pillow Talk with Rock Hudson. Sorry, I almost said Dean Martin. Rock Hudson and Doris Day.
I think I saw this once.
I think I mostly didn't see Doris Day movies.
Okay.
What's Up, Doc? 1972. Barbara Streisand, Ryan O'Neill. I think this was mentioned in The Two Bossy Dames, wasn't it?
So it's a screwball comedy with bringing up baby as its blueprint. And I don't think I've seen it because Barbara Streisand and Ryan O'Neill are not I mean, it was made in 1972. At that time, they were a hot combination. It is directed by Peter Bogdanovich of problematicness, so we'll consider the possibility. Hey, number 55 is the original Sabrina, which I already talked about.
Great. Number 54, and despite Dame Margaret telling me to watch this
any number of times,
I have not seen Amelie.
I think we've talked about this, and I said that I was not going to use up one of my tickets of getting you to watch a movie Amelie.
That's still Margaret's ticket. It's just not punched yet.
Okay. All right. I just am like, I will watch Amelie with you. I've seen it. I thought it was charming and adorable. So I am super, super sucked in by a setting, and it's a beautiful love letter to Paris, and we could watch it for that alone.
Okay. Trainwreck, 2015, with Amy Schumer and Bill Hader. I feel like the romance is there in this one, but since I like LeBron James the best in this movie, I feel like it's not really doing it for me as a romantic comedy.
I'm glad it made it into the top 100. I think there are some things in it that are good. I like the Bill Hader, like, being into her when she is trying not to make it not work.
Right.
There are things in a romantic comedy that I am really turned off by, the woman needing to make herself worthy of the man.
Right.
And I am charmed by that element of Trainwreck where Amy Schumer is like, I am not trying to get you.
This is me.
Right. And he's like, I'm into you.
Woman of the Year is another Spencer Tracy Katharine Hepburn vehicle. He's a sports writer.
1942.
So this is their first pairing. I can't tell them apart, which argues I think that we should watch a bunch of them and see if any of them are as good as Desk Set.
Well, and there is something about the 1940s romantic comedies that works for me. They're, you know, sniping at each other, or they're like, but it's all talk and no bedroom. And as much as I require explicit sex in my books, I don't want to watch it on film.
Right.
So I am very into these 1940s things. These early mentions of these movies are giving me hope for the top 50. Okay. Well, just giving me hope for the top 50.
So, Waitress, 2007, made into a successful Broadway play. Carrie Russell, Nathan Fillion, have not seen.
Directed by Adrienne Shelley, written by Adrienne Shelley. It is a charming little romantic comedy that I don't need to see again. It's got, like, really good ratings, and there's some magic realism in it that I don't know if that's in the play or not.
Okay, number 50.
We have made it to the top 50, y'all. Are you ready for us to, like, go screaming into the end zone? Is that a reasonable metaphor?
Sure, then we can spike the ball.
Okay.
When Harry Met Sally, 1989.
Number 50.
Number 50.
So this is one I can recite. This is a romantic comedy that I have found applicable to my life through...
Is that New York?
Besides that, through many iterations of romance over the last 25 years, I have thought this movie was applicable. It's good. It's directed by Rob Reiner. It's possibly his greatest achievement. It is funny and rewatchable. And
unlike some of the other ones with Meg Ryan, she spends a significant amount of time with Billy Crystal.
Because they're interacting like with friends him. Right. For 10 years before they get together. And Carrie Fisher's the greatest supporting best friend role.
Yep.
Bruno Ganz is great. Bruno Kirby, sorry, not Bruno Ganz. So many Brunos, so little time. And the talking heads of the lovers through the years where they are talking about, that is the cutest sort of interspersing.
When Harry Met Sally is a classic. I don't think we've watched it together.
I don't think we have.
Trouble in Paradise is the oldest one we've seen yet, 1932, which I have not seen.
Neither have I. Lubitsch. Maybe we should put it on the list.
Sure.
The next one is on my list of things that I want to see, so add it to the list there, please. It's Obvious Child from 2014, starring Jenny Slate, and it is an accidental pregnancy romantic comedy, which I am hoping that Knocked Up is not on this list, because it is neither romantic nor comedic, but they are sometimes sort of paralleled, and this one is, like, got more feeling, and it's directed by a woman.
Great.
Belle Époque, The Age of Beauty, another French one, we again guess. With
it might be Spanish.
It's got Penelope Cruz.
And Fernando Fernan Gomez.
Okay, I mean, I don't know. Oh, L.A. Story. This is another Steve Martin vehicle from 1991.
And
I had a friend who really wanted me to see this, and then I saw it, and I can't remember one thing about it.
So, Sarah Jessica Parker is the his love interest, and she is like a roller skating car hop. And Victoria Tennant, who Steve Martin was with at the time of the making of the movie, is like his grown-up lady friend. I liked it. And I saw it in college. And I have no idea if it holds up. It was 1991. But I liked it. Hannah and Her Sisters, number 45, is directed by Woody Allen.
Moving on. Despite all my watching of John Cusack's, I have not seen number 44, High Fidelity.
Based on a Nick Hornby book, Rob Gordon is the owner of a record store who likes to make lists. Of course, this is a way that he judges whether a woman is worthy, is if her top album lists are good. It's directed by Stephen Frears, who has directed some really good movies. It says it's a biting romantic comedy. It doesn't like its characters that much, but I liked it. It's John Cusack. And books made into movies, you know, if there's like a...
Right.
Means there's a story.
Right. Appropriate Behavior, 2015. Desiree Akhavan being part of a perfect Persian family. That sounds interesting.
It does. We should check on it and see. Number 42 is widely recognized as a very beloved romantic comedy, Moonstruck, from 1987. We did the Tubasi Dames live tweet of it, and we enjoyed it. And
I still don't like Nicolas Cage's chest hair.
Right? It deserved its own billing. I liked Cher. I'm glad she won an Academy Award for it. It was enjoyable, and there was romance and you could comedy.
Do much worse.
Yes.
Miss at New York. The Wedding Banquet, Ziyan, 1993. Ang Lee's funny and ultimately poignant. That sounds
like they don't end up together? Well, it's gay, so we're into that.
A gay New Yorker stages a marriage of convenience with a young woman. I don't remember seeing this one.
Really?
Right.
I saw it in the theater.
Well.
I lived really close to an art house.
So this one, however.
This is another one that Anna quotes all the time.
Pam Shaw's Broken Both the Legs, and I Want to Dance with You.
Strictly Ballroom from 1992, directed by Baz Luhrmann. So colorful, so beautiful, so fun.
Mockumentary style.
Mockumentary style, romantic comedy with glittery ballroom dancing, Australian, just yes.
Okay. Born Yesterday, 1950, featuring Judy Holliday, who I believe also did the stage version. I have not seen it.
So it is the chorus girl. It says a strident ex-chorus girl. She is very grating, and she's like the worst of womanhood, you know? She wants what she wants, and she talks really loud, and she drinks and smokes, and how could anybody love her? And he, like, reforms her.
Oh, well, then maybe not.
So it's 1950, but it's got some slapstick comedy elements. It was directed by George Cukor. I'm not going to dismiss it entirely. I'm just giving us some information about it.
About a Boy is 2002, number 38, with Hugh Grant and Toni Collette and Rachel Weisz. I have not seen it.
It is an adaptation of a Nick Hornby novel, again.
Interesting theme.
Hugh Grant is a Peter Pan kind of, like, never-gonna-grow-up guy, and he accidentally falls in love with the kid, but not in a dirty way, but he, like, sort of builds this relationship with this lost, sad kid that he doesn't, and then he ends up with the mom. It's funny and moving and will make you cry, and it's good. I liked it.
Okay. Do you think I should see it?
No.
Okay.
So why don't you speak on number 37?
So number 37 is Knocked Up. I just said that I hoped that it was not higher than Obvious Child on the list, and it is. It stars Katherine Heigl and Seth Rogen, and she gets pregnant after they have a one-night stand, and of course he is just not what she is looking for, and he is not looking for fatherhood, and Judd Apatow, who directed it, does not seem to like either of them very much. And it has some of the hallmarks of a romantic comedy, and is just a no.
I'm going to say also that Bridesmaids, number 36, is not a romantic comedy unless you're talking about the relationship between Kristen Wiig and Maya Rudolph.
Yep.
Who have the climactic scene together.
Right, agreed.
The Awful Truth, 1937, with Cary Grant and Irene Dunne. I don't think I've seen this one.
I don't know if I've seen it.
When we've seen a lot of Cary Grant movies, so I'm
going to put it says that they are a previously happy couple who are coming back around. And so if they're doing it Philadelphia story-wise, then I might be into it.
Okay.
Enchanted from 2007, in which Amy Adams is a Disney princess who falls into New York City, is cute. And I'm not sure it's number 34.
I haven't seen it. Four Weddings and a Funeral, again, it's got romance, but it's very sad in parts.
Yeah, it's got a Love Actually kind of vibe, because there are many characters. Right. And, you know, Kristen Scott Thomas is in love with Hugh Grant, and he ends up with Andy McDowell. And it's just like, no, I like Kristen Scott Thomas better. This is not a romantic comedy for me.
Dave is in the vein of American President, but I think a little funnier as far as I remember.
Well, Kevin Kline and,
Kevin Kline, Sigourney Weaver, you've got a president who is falling in love, which we like.
Yep.
I remember liking Shakespeare in Love when it came out. I watched it. Gwyneth Paltrow and the other finds.
Yeah, I liked it too. Costume drama. Everyone has beautiful skin and teeth. The 16th century is not super common. All of the clothes are very clean.
It's another number 30 is another Woody Allen, Manhattan, moving along. Silver Linings Playbook, I don't think is a romantic comedy based on the things I've heard about it.
It is a romance. There are possibly a couple of laughs, but it's a hard road in Silver Linings Playbook.
Number 28, Juno, with Ellen Page and Michael Cera. Again, Michael Cera is not my cup of tea.
One of the things about Juno is... So, romantic teen comedies, they end with a happily ever after, and I'm usually okay with that. Where Juno and Michael Cera go through this whole thing, and they kind of end up together, and at the end of it, I am mostly sort of like, nobody is still with their high school boyfriend. Where that is not the only thing that I think at the end of 16 Candles or Some Kind of Wonderful.
Right. Play It Again, Sam, 1972...
Starring Woody Allen and Diane Keaton.
No. Ah, Say Anything.
Number 26. Yay, Say Anything. Hey, that's set in Seattle, too.
I gave her my heart, and she gave me a pen.
I don't want to buy anything that has been sold or produced.
Sold or processed.
Yeah, that whole thing is really great. And John Mahoney is a great dad. So put Say Anything on your list if you haven't seen it.
Love, Simon is on my list here, too. We love Simon. See previous episodes.
Yep.
Ninotchka, 1939, with Greta Garbo.
Ninotchka, Greta Garbo is so funny. She is a spy. It's cute. See it. We should see it, because I don't remember enough about it. But its tagline was, Garbo laughs!
Broadcast News. James L. Brooks.
So this is a workplace romantic comedy with William Hurt and Holly Hunter and Albert Brooks and Jack Nicholson, made in 1987, which pretty much tells you what you need to know. I'm surprised it's this high on the list. I remember seeing it, and I don't remember it informing my ideas of relationships.
Number 22, Enough Said, with the departed James Gandolfini and Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Julia Louis-Dreyfus is a massage therapist, and James Gandolfini is a librarian.
Really?
It's also got Katherine Keener in it. It's one of those sort of quiet, grown-up romantic comedies that is cute how they come together.
Bull Durham, 1988. Kevin Costner is a baseball player. Susan Sarandon is his love interest.
I do like the little thing where he says what he believes in, and one of them is like long, slow, hot, wet kisses that last for 3 days.
Yes. I don't remember it being that funny.
Oh my gosh, it's hilarious. Okay.
Groundhog Day, 1993, Bill Murray and Andy McDowell.
There was a window when Andy McDowell...
I was just thinking that, was, the Andy McDowell window.
...was the romantic comedy heroine, and...
I think we should have Nick Hornby write a book, and then we should put Andy McDowell and Michael Cera and, like, Tom Hanks in it.
Okay.
Okay. The Appartement, 1960, with Shirley MacLaine and Jack Lemmon. I do not know this one.
You don't know this.
Billy Wilder.
Yeah, it's Billy Wilder. It's set in New York.
I was going to say, wait, is this set in New York?
It's set in New York. So Jack Lemmon is using... Shirley MacLaine's apartment, no, Jack Lemmon's boss is using Shirley MacLaine's apartment for assignations. There, it's got some sexual politics that are more relevant to 1960 than to now, and it's cute and funny, and Shirley MacLaine and Jack Lemmon are charming, and you have to, like, put on
your 60s glasses. Your
21st century filter. You have to take it off.
Okay. Number 18, Desk Set, with Woo-hoo! Spencer Tracy and Katharine Hepburn, in which Katharine Hepburn is a librarian.
And Spencer Tracy's
an efficiency expert.
He's the IT guy who's going to replace Katharine Hepburn with a computer. Okay. Or is he?
1958, Indiscreet, with Cary Grant and Ingrid Bergman. I don't think I've seen that one.
It's good.
Adds to list. Some Like It Hot, 1959.
Cross-dressing Jack Lemmon and Tony Curtis are in a lady band with Marilyn Monroe, and there is some fun in it. It says it's a spry, quick-witted farce that never drags, and that's true. It kind of is going at top speed through the whole thing, but Jack Lemmon and Tony Curtis being in drag and trying to get in with Marilyn Monroe is a little squirrely.
I'm a little creeped out by that. Bringing a Baby, we will watch anytime it's on.
I love this movie.
1938, Katharine Hepburn, Cary Grant's The Best of All Worlds, Howard Hawks.
There is a baby is a leopard, just to be clear. When my mom was like, you need to see Bringing a Baby, like, when I was like a teenager, and I'm like, no, thank you. And then she's like, it's a leopard. I'm like, okay.
The Princess Bride, I love, 1987, but I am not going to put it on the romantic comedy list because it is not really about the romance
exactly. No, it's about adventuring and swashbuckling and friendship and so, evil.
Even though I love The Princess Bride, I don't think it belongs here. Yeah. The Shop Around the Corner, 1940, is the first of the
film adaptations of the play.
Right. I have not seen it. It was discussed in the Two Bossy Dames newsletter, which we will be linking to.
It's good.
Holiday, with Katharine Hepburn and Cary Grant. I feel like I've seen that, but I don't remember anything about it. Put it on the list.
I don't know if I've seen it.
Adam's Rib, I have seen. I didn't like it as much as Desk Set, but that could be a librarian thing.
Spencer Tracy, Katharine Hepburn,
Judy Holiday.
But the Adam's Rib thing, this is all about, like, sexual politics,
right,
where, you know, he's better than her because he's a man, right, and everything, and that is not for us.
Right. His Girl Friday, Cary Grant, Rosalind Russell, we can agree with this one.
Oh my God. If you have not seen His Girl Friday, the Two Bossy Dames newsletter talks about this. This movie is so, so good. It is so funny. It is so sharp. It is so witty. All they're doing is arguing and having feelings. It's just great.
Number 9, Annie Hall, directed by Woody Allen. Moving on. Number 8 is City Lights from 1931, starring and directed by Charlie Chaplin. Do not have any context for this.
So the homeless tramp befriends the lovely blind flower seller and convinces her he's a millionaire. So there's... I did not like City Lights. I have seen it.
It's a 98% approval.
I guess.
So number 7 is one that I love because I think Barbara Stanwyck is beautiful in it. And she's also a con artist, I believe. So it's Barbara Stanwyck and Henry Fonda and directed by Preston Sturges from 1941. It is exactly.
It's good.
Number 6, we can agree with Crazy Rich Asians.
It's wonderful.
See various previous episodes.
And we are so glad that it's so high on this list because it just came out last year.
My Man Godfrey, 1936, William Powell, Carol Lombard. I don't know that one. Scatterbrained socialite hires a vagrant as a family butler. I'm going to have to put that on our list.
But there's more to Godfrey than meets the eye.
I like William Powell in general.
Me too. Roman Holiday is Audrey Hepburn and Gregory Peck, and she is a runaway princess who jumps on a scooter to go see Rome and get away from all of her commitments and her bodyguards and everything. I did not like it very much, in part because of the age difference.
I haven't seen it.
And also...
I'm not sure how I avoided it.
I'm not the greatest fan of breaking the rules. Sometimes it really stresses me out. And I'm like, she has bodyguards to keep her from getting killed. So I had a little angst about that.
Number three, as previously mentioned, as we discussed, The Philadelphia Story, which is a really good romantic comedy that is not... That is people who have broken up before who are getting back together.
Second chance at love.
And I don't always like that.
I don't approve of it.
Right.
Because if you couldn't work it out, I mean, it takes... Breaking up is hard.
Right.
And so I don't think anyone does it lightly. And so I'm always skeptical of getting back together.
It's a great cast. And it is. And great performances.
So funny.
The Big Sick is number two. I am...
in agreement with this.
I like The Big Sick, but again... If we have 10 Things I Hate About You at 138, and we have The Big Sick at number two, And number one, drum rolling, It Happened One Night. Claudette Colbert and Clark Gable. It has been a long time since I tried watching this.
Tried?
I don't remember finishing it.
I liked it. I watched it when I was on a tear of fleshing out my classic film knowledge.
Right.
And so I was neck deep in classic black and white comedies and dramas and all kinds of things. And the witty repartee is excellent. It's directed by Frank Capra. They're like stranded by the side of the road and they end up in, you know, there's only one room in the rooming house. And so they like drape a sheet over a string in between the two twin beds.
Okay.
There are like cute things about it. But at the end of this 150 long list of things, we have not talked about...
I have at least 20.
A huge list.
Hello? Okay. So what we're going to do is end this episode here, having discussed the list of 150, because you might need a break.
It's been more than an hour.
And we are going to do our regular obsessions and our musical obsessions, and then we're going to sign off, and then you can catch our adjusted personal list of best romantic or most loved, maybe not necessarily best romantic comedies, in episode 104. How does that sound?
Sounds good to me.
Great. Do you have a musical obsession?
Oh my gosh, I have so many musical obsessions because... We watched the Grammys.
Yeah, we did.
And I have all of the musical obsessions that are not entirely rational.
They don't have to be rational. They're obsessions. Obsessions definitely don't have to be rational. One of mine is The Middle by Zedd, featuring Maren Morris and Gray. I'm not sure who does what in that song, but I have it stuck in my head.
Yeah, it's been stuck in both of our heads for a while, and so I wasn't going to try to take that one from you. I really liked Brandi Carlile's performance, but I don't really want to put Anguish on the Musical Obsessions playlist very much.
You want to put a different, not as sad Brandi Carlile song on? I mean, Margaret already put a sad Brandi Carlile song in episode 100.
That's right, and that wasn't very long ago, so... So I'm going to go with Havana by Camila Cabello. There was a really electrifying performance that made it sound really good, and I am all for Latin pop.
And Ricky Martin was there?
Yes, Ricky Martin was there. And they had this whole, like, set piece that was supposed to look like some kind of Havanan Rear Window or something.
Sure.
It was cute.
Why not?
I like dancing.
I am going also with Rainbow by Kacey Musgraves, and she may be pandering to me, but that's okay.
Wait, are you allowed to have two musical obsessions in one episode?
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you have any more?
We saw a movie called Miss Bala.
We did!
Starring Gina Rodriguez, who we really enjoyed. The movie was a crime kidnapping movie with almost all brown people in it, and Gina Rodriguez is a
makeup artist.
Woman in distress, yep, who does not require rescue.
Yeah, she's good.
There are so many good things about it. And over the closing credits, there was a song called Call the Shots by Leslie Grace that I enjoyed because it was talking about ladies being in charge.
Yeah, I'm for it.
Yeah.
Do you have a non-musical obsession?
Well, I have a lot of non-musical obsessions. Do you have a non-musical obsession?
Sure. I am going to talk about a book I am reviewing for Booklist called Star-Crossed by an author calling herself Minnie Dark. It's a pseudonym so that she, a university professor, can write this romantic comedy, I'm guessing. It's coming out in May from Penguin Random.
Crown.
And it is very charming. It is... I'm going to go so far as to say it is a reasonable bellwether read-alike.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
I know. Refer you back to episode 100 for other attempts to do such things.
Which we were very challenged by. But it
is the story of a girl named Justine, who is an aspiring reporter, and her childhood friend Nick, who she's been in love with for most of her life. And Nick is ruled by the... horoscopes in the publication that she works for. And so when she comes upon him after many years of not being in touch, she realizes that she could use her position at the newspaper to write horoscopes that would influence his life in such a way as to fall in love with her? Question mark. It turns out to be a lot more complicated than that. And it turns out that he's not the only one that reads the horoscopes and then makes decisions based on that. And so what happens is kind of a Love Actually development where you end up having a lot of characters that you're sort of dipping in and out. Some of them are Aquarii, like Nick, and some of them are just the people who took the jobs that the Aquarii left because their horoscope told them to go in a new direction. And so if you like romantic comedy and if you like happy endings... and if you like adorable one-eyed mutts, then Star-Crossed might be for you. It's also set in Australia, so there's some Australianisms. I look forward to the audiobook.
Of course you do. Speaking of audiobooks, I am obsessed 15 years later, following the very savvy reader's advising done by friend of the podcast Kelly Jones, and followed up more recently by a friend of the podcast, Allie Watkins. I am listening to The We Free Men by Terry Pratchett, which is the first of the Tiffany Aching stories. And it is read by a Terry Pratchett superfan named Stephen Briggs, who does an amazing job with these incomprehensible accents and charming characters.
Wait, isn't there one called Jack?
No, he's not as big as medium-sized Jock, but bigger than Wee Jock Jock is his name. The Wee Free Men are the Knack-Mack Feagle. They are picked C's. They're not pixies, of course. And there was a scene just today as I was driving around in the snow where they were shouting things as they ran into a fight, because they like fighting and they like drinking and they like drinking and fighting. And they were shouting things that are recognizable to a scholar of pop culture like myself, but there can be only 100. You can take our lives, but you can never take our beards. And a few other things. I'm sure I got one of them wrong. And they frequently are heard to exclaim, Crivens, except in Scots accents, of course. I know I'm very late to it. My apologies to our listenership who have been brandishing Terry Pratchett at or near me for the last at least decade and a half.
They still haven't gotten to me.
I'm grateful and I'm enjoying it. And just today I texted Allie to say, Crivens, I'm half through the We Free Men and don't know the next one. And she promptly replied with the title for me to put a hold on, which I have done.
When in doubt, ask a librarian.
Yes, I was running errands when it occurred to me, or I would have Googled it myself. But that's why we keep librarians in our phones.
It's true. I may break my long Terry Pratchett drought and try it, since you seem to be having such a good time.
I think it might be a worthy road trip listen as a family.
Oh, yeah, that would be good.
I've been listening carefully for any concerns we might have, and I have not come across them, because little G likes fighting and drinking and drinking and fighting, and I think that it would be totally appropriate for him.
The drinking is mostly orange Fanta, as far as I can tell, but yes.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we will see you in episode 104 for our second half of this extremely long episode. Thanks for listening. You can find us on Twitter at BellwetherFriends, BellwetherFrnds. You can find us on Facebook. We're on Tumblr, intermittently. We are everywhere you want to be. We recently made it so that you could see all of our episodes in iTunes, where you can go and leave us a review. We would love to hear from you. I'm Anna, and you can find me online at Helga Grace, HELGAGRACE.
I'm Aline, and you can find me on Twitter at Surly Spice, SURLYSPICE.
Our in and out music was provided by the lovely Julie Jurgens. You can find her on Twitter at Hi Miss Julie, HIMISSJULIE.
Bye. Bye.